Island Harvest Food Bank is a lifeline for people struggling to put food on their tables during this unprecedented public health crisis. But we need your help. Your generosity will allow us to continue to provide critical food and support for homebound seniors, veterans, working family, and children. If you or someone you know needs food assistance or to support our work on Long Island, call 631-873-4775 or visit islandharvest.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock, time for another edition of Off the Wall. We have so much to talk about tonight that we're going to fade the theme down as early as we possibly can. It's another edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined by Kyle.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I pressed the wrong button. I did it very quickly.
Yes.
Didn't even get the first syllable out. I'm sorry.
I was excited because I'm using a new piece of equipment. This is a Shure microphone.
I've heard of them. They're quite good, actually.
Yes,
I found an endorsement, by the way. It's a fact.
Yeah. Well, there's different brands. When you're in the broadcast industry, you become familiar with them. Before, I was using the Electro Voice microphone.
One of the first words I ever learned in radio was Shure Mixer.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Shure. PV. There was a PV coming. They made speakers, I remember.
Touch the Shure Mixer. That was what they said to me.
Wow. Don't touch the Shure Mixer. Yeah. Well, anyway. So, hopefully I'm intelligible and I don't have to, like, scream into this device as much. But do you hear me?
I hear you fine.
You hear me. Because I hear me.
Yeah.
And I hear you.
And pretty soon, the whole world will hear us.
All right.
Oh, my God. I just quoted George W. Bush.
That's enough of
wow.
that.
Wow. Or paraphrased him. Okay,
so what's going on?
Oh, my God. Well, you know, we've got the whole coronavirus pandemic thing going on. We know about that. We're used to that. That's why we're broadcasting remotely and will be for the foreseeable future. It's working. Numbers are going down. Great. We don't know what's ahead. We don't know about second waves. But dealing with this in an intelligent, scientific way is the only way forward, and that's what we're determined to do. And we're surviving. We're doing fine. We've been able to get all the toilet paper we need.
Yeah, I'll remind you, though, a lot of people are unemployed right now as a result of this.
That is true. And you know my feelings on that.
I do.
Nobody should have to suffer because they don't have their job. They should be compensated for that. No business should have to shut down because they can't open. This is what government is for. To cover disasters like this. Putting people in harm's way, that is unconscionable, and that should not be an option.
Right, and their policies are reflecting the different approaches to it, and some might argue are insufficient to meet the moment, right? It's
absolutely.
It's important to have some kind of plan for this, and what we're seeing is a lack thereof. There's a lot of attempts, but you really need that unifying individual or sense, team, whatever. You know, even the task force for the coronavirus seems to just, we're not hearing as much from the experts. We're left to our own devices.
When did you see Fauci last?
No, he's been basically sidelined, and a lot of that task force itself has been sort of sidelined, and they're even talking about disbanding it and then undisbanded it after there was a bit of an outcry.
You've got a bunch of idiots running things right now, so of course they're going to say things like that. But the doctors, scientists, medical profession, they are still working on this. They will not stop. And this is global. This is not just a nationalistic thing. We will conquer this, and we will do it intelligently. And the facts are going to be shared and not distorted.
We're definitely no longer the epicenter, too. I believe yesterday I heard a report that Latin America, it was Democracy Now, actually, the preceding show, spoke to that yesterday, basically describing Latin America as being a place where the most cases, the cases are on the rise there.
Right, well,
and so we're definitely improving, but the reaction and the sort of plan for this next steps and the phases of this and the reopening and all of that discussion, that they're not going to serve really what we need in the long term unless we're careful. And so that's what we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, is just the sort of carelessness of individuals and of different regions and governments. And so that's something we're still all facing. And add to that civil unrest.
Don't ruin it. We're going to get to that. That was a surprise.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I think people might know about that. But what you're mentioning, Brazil is now I think the second. Well, it's no surprise the idiotic way that country has dealt with the virus, as idiotic as our country. It's funny though, because our country has banned people from flying in from Brazil. So even the Trump administration doesn't approve of what the Trump administration does when it's in a different country. Just basically saying, oh, it's no big deal, just like the flu, we're going to go out and not wear masks. Well, now look what's happening.
There's been comparisons, too, that the type of leader that we have and the type of leader that Brazil has, those are the places, when led by those individuals, those are places that fare the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in contrast, the places led by women, like New Zealand, they're doing a lot better.
Yeah, we've mentioned that. And
something about the charisma, the attitudes, the being right, and not listening. And just going,
it's almost like there's some sort of an ego attached to the men, you know. I can't put my finger on it, but like, you know, some kind of, yeah,
it's too much ego, and it is
what could
to our detriment
that? Well, we can theorize on this or just present all the facts and prove the theories, but that's where we are right now. And yes, as Kyle alluded, massive, sorry, I don't mean to shout, but it deserves a shout, massive civil unrest in this country. And you know what? God bless it. I say it is the healthiest thing in this country in ages. Now, of course, the tragedy, the horror of what happened to George Floyd in Minneapolis, being murdered in cold blood. And yeah, when you step on someone's throat for 9 minutes, knowing they can't breathe, you're a cold-blooded murderer. There is no other word for it. Don't give me this third-degree murder crap. I didn't even heard of third-degree murder. I didn't know that was a thing. It is a thing in three states. So it's the lowest form of murder, meaning the least penalty. And that is not acceptable to me. We not only did this killer cop do this, knowing what he was doing, he did it on camera and didn't care. And his pals just let him do it and didn't intervene in any way. Is that the exception? I don't know if that's the exception. After seeing what happened this week, oh my God, we have a serious problem in this country with our police. A serious problem. And it needs to be dealt with. And it ain't going to be dealt with by the police. It's going to be dealt with by those people out on the street one way or another. And we might not like the way it's dealt with, but if you ignore it, it's going to get worse. Why do you think so many cities boiled over? I've never, ever seen anything like this. I think most people listening probably have never seen anything like this. In the 1960s, I don't think it was like this. But that's the closest you could possibly get. It boiled over because of all the frustration, because of the pent-up resentment and anger and repression that's been going on for I can't even remember how long.
Also, the connectedness of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
People have been talking about this forever, especially on social media, especially on the internet, where they can find affinity groups and they can find ways to deal with this, find ways to raise the issues in their community or bring it up on a national political level. But the sentiment when people had an understanding of this and when people had, you reflect that based on all of the discussion and all of that consciousness, mm-hmm, of this kind of abuse, it didn't take any real explaining for people to understand that this was a moment we will not turn a blind eye to. Mm-hmm. We will not allow the police and those authority figures to get off with no repercussion and to not be held to account.
Right.
These people, and if you're a young person out there, you might not realize, like, these institutions, these police departments have been militarized. This is all, like, post 9/11 stuff. The equipment they're using, yes, they have a lot more non-lethal stuff, but the armored vehicles, the riot gear, all of that stuff was paid for post 9/11 at the turn of this century, and this is how it is being wielded.
I want to talk about that in some detail. I've got some information on that, because that is definitely at the root of the problem here. Well, one of the roots. There's many roots to this problem, but the militarization of police is certainly one of them.
It is, I think, something people didn't really understand, that before 2000, a lot of police departments didn't have this kinds of equipment. They wouldn't wear gas masks and things like this. And what I think we'll get into is that they instigate, they participate a lot more, and especially when they have this kind of equipment. When they're not afraid of tear gas because they're wearing a gas mask, they're going to use more tear gas. You know, and anyway, we'll spend some time on that. But I just want to point out that as much as the consciousness of ideas, as much as people in solidarity or who are allied and who understand the injustice at hand, as much as they were ready for this to kick off, the various police departments, they have been armed. And if they're not treating this as a real-life scenario, this is their biggest training exercise for something bigger, depending on, you know, what kind of scale you're talking about. But this is no joke. They had all of this stuff sitting around. They're apt to use it, but people are not afraid. And I think that's really the most interesting part.
I have to say, I am so proud of so many people that I've witnessed standing up to incomprehensible power and brutality, and just basically joining together in a fight for justice. That takes courage, that takes guts, and to see so many people doing that is inspiring, and it makes me hold out hope that we will get past this. It seems like it's impossible, but there have been plenty of examples throughout the world, throughout the years, where the insurmountable is surmounted. And I think we're seeing the beginning of that right now. Actually, we're seeing people gathering at the White House again tonight. It was disgusting what happened there last night. For those who don't know, there's a similar gathering at the White House. When I say that, it's ridiculous. There's a massive wall or fence, whatever you want to call it, that nobody can get past. There's a huge road, and then there was a park across the street, which is where everybody was.
Now they have a huge gate in that park, I believe. So they're just trying to push people further and further away.
But basically, they were nowhere near the White House. I mean, the White House is there, but they're not, like, about to breach it or anything crazy like that. Although, honestly, I would welcome the sight of that. To be honest, Trump cowering in his bunker. Yeah, don't get me started. But because he wanted a photo op in front of a church, which had been on fire, or part of it had been on fire the night before. And again, we don't know who set the fire. We can get into that too. But this has become a big rallying cry for the right wing. How these demonstrators are anarchists at burning down churches. Yeah, right. So basically, he wanted his photo op, and so he had the entire peaceful demonstration, just like it is right now, gassed, clubbed, beaten, just like any two-bit dictator would do, so that he could walk across the street and take his picture. That is what we are dealing with right now in America. That is the level of leadership. That is our president. And that is why people are angry, because of that, because of the actions of the cops, because of the injustice that goes unanswered year after year. People have had enough. And the biggest mistake you can make right now is to ignore that, to trivialize that, or to try and pass it off as something that it's not.
Yeah, I would just add pelted. People are being hit with bullets, with beanbags, with batons.
I swear to God, how do you justify that? There are so many. All you have to do is go online anywhere, pick your platform of choice, and you will see countless videos of people who aren't doing anything, being shot, being kicked, being run over, being pushed, hit with car doors as cops are passing by. Every one of those instances needs to be answered. Every one of those cops needs to be in prison for this, I think. This is a horrible thing. It's a betrayal of the trust that we instill in these people. And honestly, if you are a cop and you don't condemn this, then you're as bad as they are, because it means one day you will do it yourself. So,
yeah, I was just going to comment that these are probably, a lot of these cops don't normally behave this way, but this is their opportunity to, and they're probably the same officers that you're very friendly to, or that you would consider really nice guys.
Well, that's scary. And you know, the percentage of cops who are domestic abusers, I think maybe some of them do act that way in different ways at other times of the week. But the idea of being, I like being friendly with cops. I do. I'm not one of these people that says, oh, we have to abolish the cops. I think that's stupid. Obviously, you need a police force of one sort or another. There are criminals. There are times where you need that. There is nothing more inspiring to me. I don't mean that literally, because there's plenty that's more inspiring to me. But I am inspired by cops that do good things, that help people, that are there when you need them. Because that is what it's all about. You should know the name of your local cop. Your local cop should know you, and not because he's investigating you, because he's looking out for you. That's what it's supposed to be about. That's not what we have right now. That is nowhere near what we have right now. We have an occupying force. We have paratroopers. We have, basically, they look like robots from the future. And I'm sorry, but, you know, you being hit by a plastic water bottle, it's not the same thing as being hit by a bullet that you fired because somebody threw a plastic water bottle at you. I'm sorry, you likely didn't even feel it with all the armament that you're wearing. So it's this ridiculous attitude of superiority that is being foisted upon us that is really making matters so much worse.
And it's turned into a real perception of a double standard,
mm-hmm.
that the law applies when it's anybody but them. And when it's them, when there's evidence, when there's video,
right.
when we've all seen it, they don't get arrested. There's still three other officers that have not been arrested.
The blue line where you stand up for your fellow officer, that's a load of crap, and it has to stop. It has to stop. I'll condemn people. Okay, fine. You want an example? The idiots who threw a Molotov cocktail into a police car? Those people are terrible people. They don't represent what we're talking about right here. Why do people that are protesting injustice have to basically represent everybody who's out on the street doing whatever when the cops can't even be represented as for the actions of other cops? You know, when they get away with all this, it's absurd and ridiculous. Cops have to stand up for justice. They have to speak out when somebody does something wrong. I know they're punished and they're chastised and horrible things happen to them. So that tells me the entire system needs reworking. So, you know, maybe just like fire them all. Hire the ones who will stand up for the people, speak out against the horrible things that we have seen, not just with George Floyd, the horrible things we've seen in the past few days. You know, the cops, the police forces of the United States have pretty much done the job of the demonstrators in showing why people are angry. You want to see why people hate the police? Here are some examples. Let's bash some people in the head. Did you see that video where people are literally standing on their porches and this gang, they're a gang of thugs. You want to use the word thug, this is where you use it. A gang of armed thugs with armor up the ass. I'm sorry, but there's no other phrase for it. Just basically plodding down the street screaming at people to get the F inside their houses, because apparently they don't want you standing on their porches, and then they start shooting people. They start shooting people who are standing on their damn porches. Now, I'm no gun-toting person, but if I were, That would be all the excuse I would need to open fire on those bastards. And I'm surprised that didn't happen. And don't you be surprised when it does happen, because this is the kind of reaction you are going to provoke. And while I hate violence and I don't justify something like that, I can't be surprised by it. I'm not surprised by the looting. What did you expect? What did you think was going to happen when you made people this angry? It's not on the rest of us to fix your mess, to tell people to stop them. No, you made the situation. Deal with it now. And you're not going to deal with it with curfews. New York City has a curfew right now. Not right now, but at 8 o'clock. It goes into effect for the rest of the week. Last night was a curfew. Started at 11. More looting than ever. Have you been to New York City, Mayor? I've lost so much respect for Mayor de Blasio, the things he has done over the past few days. But this, to impose a curfew and think that's going to work, it's ridiculous. It is insane.
I was speaking with someone and had the same thought that these organizations, this must remain about what is at hand, the injustice at hand, and not about all of the unrest that's going on around this because nothing has been done. And I really hope that the protesters, the organizations that are working really hard to get that message out and support George Floyd's family and so on, I hope they do not exhaust themselves defending all of the things that take place, because it's not for them to defend. If you, and I'm talking about people that are upset with those organizations and missing the point of the injustice,
right.
If you don't like direct action, if you don't like the messiness of this and the chaos that becomes evident, you know, becomes every, you know, ubiquitous,
mm-hmm.
in these moments when there is a lack of control and people are expressing their outrage, don't create, don't legitimize the unjust circumstances that make it the last option and only option. I mean, it's plain as that. You must address the things that create these circumstances instead of splitting hairs over who's doing what in a mass of thousands of people. No, the people are there pushing back against the leadership that is not acting.
My God, look at the soldiers outside. What is it, the Lincoln Memorial?
Yeah.
Basically, armed to the teeth so that people don't approach it. This is what our country is turning into right now. It's like an armed camp.
He set off the ability to bring in full military and treat this as a battlefield or a battle space, as was said. Mark Esper said that.
He basically threatened the entire country with its own military.
And the only reason he was able to do that in D.C., what has been reported, is because legally there is no governor, so it's the one state that can't...
Well, it's not a state. That's the reason.
Right. It can't profess control or, you know, maintain control over that because it does not have that class as a district.
Right. But this is what he wants to do. He wants to unleash the military on his own people. This tells you so much about the person that he is and the things that he will resort to. And it is frightening. It is truly scary. And he's moved well beyond addressing the actual injustice that began all this. He has not said a word about the police brutality that we've witnessed over the past week.
This all fits in a really squeaky narrative for him, actually, to shut things down, to just lean on being a strong leader and how much you fawn over the military.
This is not being a strong leader.
But that's the way.
Being a corrupt dictator is what
they will
this is.
Try to cast it that way. Mark mm-hmm. my words.
Well, now we're talking about being responsible, taking responsibility, or being labeled by the worst people in a group of tens of thousands. And one of the things that we have seen over the past few days is Trump and his people wanting to label Antifa as a terrorist organization. Now, this is funny in a number of ways.
Yeah, it's funny, like handcuffing a fart.
Okay, that's an interesting concept. But first of all, Antifa is it's like Anonymous. It's where, you know, people have this name or concept attached to things they say or things they do. But there is no structure. There is no organization. There's just a vague idea.
Yeah, it's a concept.
Right. And I share many of the vague concepts that Antifa purports to have. And it's weird to hear yourself described as a domestic terrorist, but that apparently is what I am now.
It's also it's also similar to what has been said about Black Bloc. People talk about Black Bloc in some of these anti-capitalism and other protests they're a group. They're not.
Yeah, they're not. You're right, and it is the same thing.
It's a tactic.
But it's more easily defined because they literally dress in black and they tend to do similar things.
That's the accusation that's been made. They're wearing black, so they're a rioter.
Right, right, right. Okay, but Antifa, I think, is more spread out than that. I think Black Bloc is focused a lot more. Antifa is basically anti-fascist, and that's really it. That's the core of it. Now, there are some people in Antifa that believe in breaking glass or being violent in various ways, and I don't believe in violence except if Nazis come to town, yeah, strike out at them. I believe in being violent at actual Nazis. That makes me a bad person? Fine, I'm a bad person then. But that is my core belief in what Antifa is. Now, you've been probably hearing a lot of things on the news and the media about this evil Antifa, how they're scary and how these demonstrators are part of them and how they all go out looting afterwards. Most of it is complete nonsense. But some of it's even more nonsense than that. From NBC News, false rumors about Antifa organizing bus rides to take protesters into white neighborhoods and loot residences have gone viral in recent days on digital neighborhood platforms and in group texts throughout the U.S. Now, how many times have you heard of a house being looted? That really hasn't been happening. Some of the posts feature a screenshot of a tweet by a fake Antifa Twitter account that Twitter said was created by the white nationalist group Identity Europa, attempting to drum up fear of looting in residential and suburban areas. The false Antifa tweet was boosted in part by Donald Trump, who posted a screenshot of the tweet to his Instagram account.
They're astroturfing fascism.
Excuse me, Donald Trump Jr. It's hard to tell the difference sometimes, but Donald Trump, does he even use Instagram? Other rumors falsely warn of Antifa members being bussed into towns in Idaho. The social media rumors about outsiders coming to damage property or commit acts of violence at protests have ripped through local communities over the last week, aided by neighborhood-focused social media networks and groups. So many people are falling for this. It's insane. Rumors circulating on Facebook and Nextdoor that buses filled with thousands of Antifa and other outside agitators on their way to loot white neighborhoods prompted law enforcement to respond to fearful residents in the Sacramento suburbs that they are monitoring messages on social media causing worry and concern. So this is what we're contending with right now. And it's a pretty well orchestrated attempt to shift the focus, to shift the narrative, to demonize the people who are standing up for justice and exercising their constitutional rights. And it's something we cannot fall for. It's something that we have to be really, really careful about and not buy into that narrative in any way.
Right. I just think that the astroturfing seems to be just like a false flag to stir that up and let it get magnified on its own. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that.
Sure. I'm just looking at other news reports here. This is brilliant from the New York Times, just the headline alone. Facing protest over use of force, police respond with more force. Yeah, and the mass media is getting it to a large degree. This is something that we need to acknowledge. And I know a lot of people are loath to do that. But CNN, MSNBC, some of the major networks, they're giving this good coverage. Now, is it the best coverage? No. But it's a hell of a lot better than it has been in the past. If you go back to the 1960s, 70s, 80s, you wouldn't have the kind of coverage that you're seeing right now on your televisions. You just wouldn't. It would all be police statements, government statements, condemnations. It would not be giving voice to the demonstrators. It would not be showing the injustice that led to this. That needs to be acknowledged. Yeah, we can do better. But let's acknowledge the good that we've accomplished.
I'm looking at the people protesting. They have an ASL interpreter on the steps with them.
Like, everyone seems to have one of those now.
In the protest group.
That's great.
Yeah. But it's so important to listen and, I don't know. I think that you wouldn't see the diversity like that. There's a real unity behind all the walks of life represented in the protests. Your idea of who's protesting wouldn't be what it is without the photojournalists and the reporters doing their job, understanding how many different cities, understanding how many different walks of life are participating and against what's going, you know, what's being wielded upon black individuals and all of us writ large.
Right, right. Now, so to get back to this New York Times piece with the great headline, demonstrations continued across the United States on Sunday as the nation braced for another grueling night last night of unrest over police shootings and the death of George Floyd. Amid growing concern that aggressive law enforcement tactics intended to impose order were instead inflaming tensions. And they certainly did.
I think like all the cops are probably trained with like counterinsurgency stuff. So they're probably looking at all these protesters not as Americans.
No, that's exactly
it. They're treating us as though we're alleged ISIS members, not to throw in other groups.
We're insurgents.
That is exactly how
they are viewing us. In exchange, we are viewing them as an occupying force. Because that is exactly how they appear.
Well, and a lot of them basically grew up in Afghanistan or Iraq doing this to other nations.
Well, they're not from Afghanistan, meaning they went over there.
When they became adults, mm-hmm. they were in a war where they got to go and abuse other people.
And by the way, how come the people condemning all the looting and broken glass, when you do it overseas in someone else's country, well, that's justified. That's part of what we have to do over there. Yeah. Get a grip. Anyway, let's go back to this article. It's a really good article. Videos showed police officers in recent nights using batons, tear gas, pepper spray, rubber bullets on protesters, bystanders, and journalists, especially journalists, my God. Well, at least it seems that way, often without warning or seemingly unprovoked. The footage, which has been shared widely online, highlighted the very complaints over police behavior that have drawn protests in at least 75 cities across the United States. 75, and I think it's more than that. In Salt Lake City, officers in riot gear shoved a man with a cane to the ground. That was disgusting. An elderly guy with a cane just standing there, shoved him to the ground. Probably broke something when they did that. It was really violent. In Brooklyn, we all saw this. Two police SUVs plowed into a crowd of protesters. And that's where I lost all faith in the mayor when he said, yeah, I understand why they did that. Not his exact words, but he understands. Because the crowd was acting inappropriately. The crowd was acting inappropriately? You know, you saw the police trucks being pelted with objects of plastic, things that couldn't even dent the car. And that's a reason for you to plow through a crowd of people? If you did that as a civilian, what do you think would happen to you? The mayor wouldn't be praising you, that's for sure. But, you know, his tune changed, by the way, after his daughter got arrested. The mayor's daughter got arrested. You can't write this stuff. All of a sudden, he starts criticizing the cops again. Here's the issue. When de Blasio got into power, one of the first things he did was criticize police behavior. And he was widely condemned, especially by the cops, and intimidated. They turned their backs to him and all that. We had an opportunity then to really back him up on that stance. But no, just like the left always does, it's not good enough. You know, there's something else that you didn't do that makes us not want to support you in this.
Years of that.
Same reason health care, when Barack Obama finally got that through, not good enough, we're not going to support it, we're going to condemn Barack Obama too. And then it's easily defeated because nobody's supporting it. The left isn't supporting it. The right isn't supporting it. We don't always get exactly what we want. But if we get a step in that direction, we need to support that. And we need to encourage the next step, not condemn the person for not taking five steps at once. So now we have this wishy-washy mayor who is trying to please the cops and trying to say the right thing for the demonstrators, and he is completely ineffectual now. And it's sad because there was such potential there.
Yeah, and a lot of what I've noticed, too, is the condemnation of education. And when you see young people out here like this, there's been critiques, I think, of that this age group is somehow learning too much, or they're learning the wrong things in our educational system. And I think that's a real denial of our history, and I think it shows that there's this glorification of being ignorant, of making up things and not having a kind of core understanding of history and our placement in it. And it's for weeks, for months, I mean, this really kicked off. I mean, I was saying this to you, kind of missing the Olympics right now as like something unifying that we could all sort of look at. And this has been going on for 400 years, 200 years, injustice, as it were. But this kicked off right around when we were going into space again from American soil. And it basically, that achievement, which turned into a photo op for the president and so forth, was wholly overshadowed by the unrest that those astronauts were leaving. And it is basically this last week and two weeks, it kicked off into something unbelievable. I would argue something bigger even than some of the climate marches in so far as participation and engagement and people really not misunderstanding their own history and misunderstanding why they're there and what they're up against as far as police go. And it's those leaders, I think, that aren't agile, that can't speak to the moment, that I think we're really missing. And it's too bad, I think, that when de Blasio was starting, that people kind of kicked him while he was down and just really wouldn't allow him the satisfaction of being righteous coming into a position like that and getting a little inkling of support. But it's not so important now, because I guess where I'm going is that folks are engaged. They don't have any confusion. They have clarity, and they're acting without that leadership. And if he's not going to rise to the moment, someone else will, or group will.
I'm just worried that somebody from the other side will, because this side has become weak because we don't support each other nearly enough. And now we have a bad situation. Anyway, let me continue with these examples here. In Atlanta, police officers enforcing a curfew stopped two college students in a car, fired tasers on them while they were inside the car, and dragged them out of the vehicle, all captured on video. All of this is on video. In Minneapolis, where there have been six consecutive nights, actually seven, probably eight as of tonight, a video appeared to show officers yelling at people on their porches to get inside and then firing paint canisters at them, saying, light them up. That's what we referred to before. I could go on. There are just so many examples. Go on the internet. You'll see video of all this. It all happened.
How about the arrest of a CNN reporter on live TV?
Yeah. I forgot about that. Pales in comparison to all the things that happened since then.
Yeah, that got me donating to my professional organizations.
But he was out in an hour. He wasn't injured.
Right.
But still, the only reason it happened was because he was black.
Fully.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right in front of our eyes.
Anyway, we were talking about the militarization. It's known as the 1033 program, and it basically transfers excess military equipment to civilian law enforcement agencies. It basically requires the Department of Defense to make various items of equipment available to local law enforcement. That's why your local police department might have a tank.
They're called Bearcats.
It was instituted by Bill Clinton, 1997, National Defense Authorization Act, though precedents go all the way back to World War II. As of 2014, and we really need an update on this, 8,000 local law enforcement agencies participated in the program that has transferred $5.1 billion in military material from DOD to law enforcement agencies since 1997.
a lot of it is surplus stuff, stuff that the military was phasing out, and they bought new stuff and basically funneled and laundered it through local police.
Yeah, ammunition, cold weather clothing, sandbags. These are fairly, you know, not that crazy. But then you get into aircraft. Why do you cops need aircraft? Armored vehicles.
Well, think about the things we talk about with surveillance all the time. Stingray, cell phone intercept surveillance equipment, all of that kind of stuff that you would need to be a government contractor or need to have a military or GAO contract for. They just transfer it to local police departments and let them run free with it.
That's exactly what the case is. Obama administration curtailed the program in 2015 after local police suppressed the Ferguson, Missouri protest using armored vehicles and other military-grade equipment. But Trump reinstated the program in 2017, saying it was necessary for protecting the police. What protects us? Because it ain't the police. So now there are some senators that are introducing bills that will end the 1033 program. And it's unclear if there will be enough votes to pass legislation. Probably won't be voted on until later this year. But this is where we put the pressure on all of our senators to end the 1033 program, to demilitarize the police. We do not need this. This should not be happening. This is why you're seeing this kind of reaction, this kind of response, these kinds of killings, these kinds of beatings. This is not what we deserve. This is not what we signed up for.
And what's the logical extent? Is the expectation that these citizens are to exercise their Second Amendment rights and show up with long guns?
Well, I'll tell you, you cannot be surprised.
Because you'll see cops and officers run the opposite way, I think, if that many people had weapons.
You cannot be surprised when cop cars start burning. You know, when those two SUVs ran into the crowd in Brooklyn, shortly afterwards, police cars were burning.
A van.
I don't care. I don't care what it was. It deserved to burn. After something like that, that precinct deserved to burn. Get everybody out. Nobody should be injured, but if you do something horrible to your people, expect to pay the price. That is the lesson that is being taught. And I don't support looting, I don't support vandalism, but when police are brutalizing people, they need to pay the price. Every single one of those cops that is in the long list of abuses that we have seen on national TV over the last few days, every single one of them needs to pay the price. How many of them do you think will? When you have somebody who murders somebody in cold blood on video, and everybody sees it, and yet, the district attorney initially says there's no evidence that that action caused the death of the person, that he was just unhealthy, basically blaming him for his own death. When you have that, you start to realize that, they get away with everything. They get away with everything, and this is why people are getting so angry, and you cannot be surprised when they lash out to this extent. When they're kept down so much, when these cops keep getting away with it, they will pay the price, one way or another. Or we can have a dialogue, a real dialogue, and change things. Get rid of the heavy artillery. Get rid of the bad cops. Train the good cops. Have a dialogue. Know your local cop's name. Have them be familiar with the community. Have them live in the community. These are basic things. It's not unreasonable. But you continue to act like an occupying force, you're going to be treated like an occupying force, and occupying forces are driven out. Occupying forces have their cars and buildings burned, and sometimes a lot worse than that. And I am glad it hasn't gotten a lot worse than that. I'm kind of surprised it hasn't. But I'll tell you what, if this continues, this kind of behavior on their part continues, it will be like a civil war. And that is not where I think any of us want to go.
Yeah, a big aspect of this that has been discussed as well as that equipment policy that people are trying to change was the qualified immunity, I believe, that all police officers have. And it basically makes the consequences for their actions really hard to be brought or to be questioned, or, you know, the impact that it has on people. They have really no there's no repercussion for the police officers, and there's no mechanism for people to seek restitution and be made whole by whatever kind of abuse they're subjected to. So yeah, that's qualified immunity. That's another thing that's being discussed. And I think one suggestion I read that seems kind of sound is, instead of just I think it's only something I don't even know if you can fight it in civil court or fight against their actions in civil court. But one idea was to make it so that they can be prosecuted, and so that damages are paid out of a pension funds.
Yeah, out of their pension funds.
So that they actually feel, because a burnt police van, I mean, do they really feel it? No. Maintenance has to tow it away. They buy another van from
right.
GM or whatever.
Right.
That doesn't hurt any individual.
No, you're right. You're right.
If
they need to feel the pain. They need to feel, not literal pain.
If their nest egg got dented by them denting people on the job, mm-hmm. I think there would be a little bit, at least some consequence to this. The other thing that's interesting is how police are moved around, much like priests in the Catholic
wow.
Church.
Wow, okay.
No, they are. When they do something bad in one area, they don't get their ability to be police officers revoked, and that also is being looked at. People do not want cops to just be able to leave one area for violations and complaints, as this officer had 17 complaints, and then just go somewhere else starting anew. They need to have their ability to practice revoked, just like a medical doctor and now priests.
I think, you know, this is my own personal opinion. It's probably a stupid opinion, but I think if you're a cop and you kill somebody, you're done, whether you're right or wrong, because killing somebody should be a big deal. And if you do that, even if it was justified, you don't want to get used to it. You don't want it to be, oh, that was the first time I killed somebody. Yeah, okay, now we find out if it was justified or not. If it's not justified, you pay the penalty. And if it is justified, you're retired as a cop, do something else now, because this is a bad scene. And you don't want to continue down that road. That's just my opinion. I think we should treat it a lot more seriously than just having, you know, this is how many people I killed during my career. It's unhealthy. But speaking of unhealthy, we were talking about Antifa and what Trump is doing and trying to label a concept as domestic terrorism and the dangers that such a thing presents. I saw a tweet by Trump where basically this guy was telling people where to set up a table to hand out water to people who are being affected by tear gas, which is illegal in war, by the way, but legal on the American people. Well, you can get to that some other time. But this video showing this guy coordinating setting up tables to give water to people that were being gassed. Trump targets this individual. The president of the United States targets him and says, this is Antifa. What do you think that is going to do to that person's life, if the concept of Antifa as a terrorist organization is actually accepted? And it is accepted by idiots, and there are plenty of idiots out there, plenty of congressmen. This guy, Matt Gaetz, remember him from
Gates.
Gates?
Yeah.
Whatever. He's the one who wore the gas mask when they were talking about coronavirus. Now that we clearly see Antifa as terrorists, can we hunt them down like we do those in the Middle East? This is a congressman saying this. Another person running for U.S. Senate in Arkansas says, if local law enforcement is overwhelmed and needs backup, let's see how tough these Antifa terrorists are when they're facing off with the 101st Airborne Division. You see the sickness that is developing here, turning the military against its own people, referring to activists, demonstrators as terrorists.
They're demonizing people. They're basically ideas they don't like. They want to be able to have free rein to kill people with ideas contrary to theirs. It is the most kind of disgusting, gross exceptionalism, that you're not equal to people who have ideas that are different than you. I'm so tired of other people's ideas like that being raised as though they're any more valid than my concept of disagreement with that.
Mm-hmm.
There is this contrary point of view to almost anything. And for this stuff to be raised, it's basically this slippery slope, this creep, and these leaders and different people testing the water to see how far they can push this culture war until it's actually a full-on war. And they so want to do this. They're looking for any excuse to themselves be violent. And don't think there aren't provocateurs and misinformation and disinformation all over this thing.
And we've been reporting on some of the bigger protests. There have been many, many smaller ones, including out here on Long Island. There have been, I think, about a dozen at least, all of which are pretty peaceful. They don't all descend into chaos, and that really, it's directly linked to how the police deal with it. And if you have a good relationship with your police department, you're likely not to have rioting, looting, and expressions of frustration that occur when people feel completely suppressed and hostile. So maybe there are some lessons to be learned there. Here is certainly a lesson to be learned. Going back to December 21st of 1989 in Bucharest, Romania, the leader, Nicolae Ceaușescu, addressed an assembly of approximately 100,000 people to condemn an uprising that was going on in a place called Timișoara. Party officials took great pains to make it appear that Ceaușescu was still immensely popular. Busloads of workers, under threat of being fired, arrived in the palace square. They were augmented by bystanders who were rounded up and told to attend this rally. Basically, the speech was typical of most of Ceaușescu's speeches over the years, making liberal use of Marxist-Leninist rhetoric. He delivered a litany of the achievements of the socialist revolution and Romanian multilaterally developed socialist society. He blamed the Timișoara uprising on fascist agitators. However, Ceaușescu was out of touch with his people and completely misread the crowd's mood. The people remained unresponsive, and only the front rows supported Ceaușescu with cheers and applause. About 2 minutes into the speech, some in the crowd actually began to jeer, to boo, whistle, and yell insults at him, a reaction unthinkable from most of his rule. Workers from a Bucharest power plant started chanting Timișoara, Timișoara, which was soon picked up by others in the crowd. In response, Ceaușescu raised his right hand in hopes of silencing the crowd. His stunned expression remains one of the defining moments of the end of communism in Eastern Europe. He then tried to placate the crowd by offering to raise workers' salaries by about 5 or 10%. But a revolution was brewing right in front of his eyes. And as Ceaușescu was addressing the crowd from the balcony of the Central Committee building, sudden movement came from the outskirts of the massed assembly, as did the sound of what various sources have reported as fireworks, bombs, or guns, which together caused the assembly to break into chaos. Initially frightened, the crowds tried to disperse. Bullhorns then began to spread the news that the Securitate was firing on the crowd and that a revolution was unfolding. This persuaded people in the assembly to join in. The rally turned into a protest demonstration, and the entire speech was being broadcast live nationwide. Censors attempted to cut the live video feed and replace it with communist propaganda songs and video praising the Ceaușescu regime. But parts of the riot had already been broadcast, and most of the Romanian people realized that something unusual was in progress. Ceaușescu and his wife, as well as other officials, panicked, and their bodyguards hustled them back into the building. That, my friends, is history. And seeing how Trump is out of touch with reality and the ways that he addresses crowds and the reaction that he seems to be blind to, I can't help but wonder, are we heading down that road? Are we heading to a place where people's voices, people's actions, people's numbers will simply overwhelm what is actually going on? I never thought we'd get to this stage, but here we are. And where it goes, I don't know. Looking right now, there's more peaceful protests going on. We'll see if things calm down or if more brutality is used against him.
He's not safe in New York anymore.
Well, the guy is safe because he's in a bubble, and that bubble is made out of steel, and he can pretty much go anywhere and convince himself that everybody loves him. And that's what Ceaușescu did. It didn't work out for him.
It's going to take vigilance to maintain that, though.
And we have an election coming up. We'd love to hear your points of view on all this, your experiences. If you were part of the demonstrations, tell us your experiences on that. otw@2600.com is our email address. You know, back in 1980, there were riots in Miami. Now, these were riots that occurred following the death of a guy named Arthur McDuffie at the hands of four police officers who tried to arrest him after a car chase. And the cops were tried and acquitted for manslaughter and evidence tampering, among other charges. And basically, what happened was, in the incident, they caught him, a scuffle ensued, and in the words of the prosecutor, by the end of that struggle, the officers had cracked McDuffie's skull like an egg, and they got away with it. So, rioting broke out in the neighborhoods of Overton and Liberty City. And until the Rodney King riots, those were the biggest that had happened. Actually, in some ways, a lot worse than now because there were fatalities. There were 18 deaths, I believe.
But did not have the accompanying imagery.
Certainly did not have the accompanying imagery. Rodney, 40 years later.
Yeah, Rodney King, we had video. First time we had video, I think. One of the first times it was really broadcast widely, and is, everybody knows that footage very well, but also we've escalated even further.
In 40 years, so little has changed because we're still talking about the same basic things and still acting surprised when we get the reaction. That's it for us. Have a good night.
Miami, May 19th. About 500 blacks gathered peacefully for a rally in the area where two nights of racial rioting left at least 15 persons dead.
I was walking Miami Beach. I was feeling so out of reach. It was not like the European night. Ooh, it was not like the Broadway light. They like a separate a black from a white. They like a separate a black from his right. I was feeling so out of touch. Oh, I don't like this place very much. Walking down the road in the boiling heat. The Miami sun in the middle of the street. See a cop with a club and a gun. The man say he never hurt anyone. He lied through his teeth with a smiling face. He cried to the judge and they closed up the case. Now you know that's a real and a true, you know.
Some shooting and looting continued. Smoke rose from some of the fires that were set, triggered by the acquittal of four former white policemen in the beating to death of a black man.
I was walking down the road in the blistering heat. A bomb exploded on a hot concrete. It can happen in the broad daylight. It can happen in the middle of the night. Screech and a scream and a pistol shot. Can't be a dream if it sounds like that. It's a riot in the Liberty City. A race riot such a downright pity. Walking down the road one afternoon. I'm feeling upset, no I'm not immune. Let me tell you a story. Another painful story.
The dead included 8 blacks, 6 whites, and a policeman who had an heart attack. More than 370 persons were injured, 12 critically.
I was walking Miami Beach. I was feeling so out of reach. It was not like a European night. Oh, it was not like the Broadway light. They like a separate effect from his right. They like to separate a black from the white. I just feel so out of touch. Ooh, I don't like this place very much. Walking down the road in a the club and I don't, you know. The man said he no hurt anyone. He lied to a thief with a smiling face. He cried to the judge and they closed up the case. What you think of a world like that? A pretty little world like that.
Four policemen were shot, none seriously. There were reports that 19 persons had died, but police gave the figure of 15, including the policeman.
Walking down the street in the blistering heat, a bomb exploded on a hot concrete. It can happen in the broad daylight. It can happen in the middle of the night. Ooh! Scream, a pistol shot. It can't be a dream if it sounds like that. It's a riot in the Liberty City.
WUSB, Stony Brook.